Welcome to New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care's podcast. This free podcast is made possible through your generosity. Please consider making a donation through our Ways to Give link on zencare.org. Wow.
So this morning is, as many of you know, Gay Pride here in New York City. And as many of you know, this particular day is significant for many people in particular because of the shootings in Orlando. To all 50 of the people who died on that day, we remember them. And what it means to suppress parts of ourselves and how that causes violence in subtle and not subtle ways. I've been so particularly interested in Omar and about the violence in himself and how it played out, harming so many people. His own sexuality, and how suppression of anything can lead to such incredible violence. And in my experience in this practice, it happens in subtle and not subtle ways. I think most of us are quite violent towards ourselves, and not just accepting or allowing what actually is just happening, who we are, just to flourish. And for some reason, that's incredibly difficult for many of us. I'm also remembering my grandma, Mimi. So great, you know, her death day is also on Chodo's birthday. She died on Chodo's birthday. As did my grandma Dorothy. Both of my grandmothers died on Chodo's birthday. But Mimi particularly loved Chodo. So, pride tends to happen between her death day and her birthday, which is on the 28th. She would have enjoyed this day. Zen teacher Isan Dorsey established Maitri Hospice, the first Zen hospice, we could say, in this country. Maitri is often translated as loving kindness, which was kind of radical also for a Zen person to use a Theravadan word. One of the Brahma Viharas, one of the great abodes. And when he was dying on his deathbed, one of his closest friends came to visit him and said, "I'm going to miss you." And Isan said, "I'm going to miss you too." Then he asked his friend, "Are you going somewhere?" This idea that we think that someone who dies goes somewhere. It's like all those young people in Orlando, like, where did they go? They seem more present now to so many people than when they were living. Whoever knew about the Pulse nightclub in Orlando? Whoever knew their names? And now I make it a practice of just reading their names each morning. Eson Dorsey was born in 1933 and died in September 6, 1990. He was born Tommy Dorsey. And he was a Zen, became a Zen monk and a Dharma era Richard Baker. And the first abbot of the Hartford Street Zen Center, located in the heart of the Castro in San Francisco. But earlier in his life, much like Vilma Kirti, he was a prostitute, drug dealer, drug taker, drag queen. Pretty funky, pretty edgy, and queer, quite funny. He was raised as a Catholic and the youngest of 10 children. And as a young boy, he wanted to become an entertainer, which he did. He joined the Navy, dropped out of college and joined the Navy. And that's when he started putting on shows while he was in the Navy. You can imagine. He had, one of his first lovers was in the Navy, and he and his lover were kicked out of the Navy for being lovers. And finally, he became a waiter in North Beach, but then he rose to fame as a drag performer in the Castro. And traveled in a roadshow known as the Party of Four, of drag performers going up and down the coast. To make extra money, he was a prostitute. At the shows and after the shows, apparently. When he returned, he started dealing drugs in the Lower Haight. And if you've been there, now Lower Haight is a whole different scene. And he founded his own commune and a rock band. But I think what started to change, he started to take hallucinogenics and LSD, and he had his first spiritual experience on LSD. Apparently, while looking at a photograph of Rama Maharishi, he had a big experience. So he constructed an altar where he would shoot speed and gaze at the picture for many hours. But soon he gave up drugs and started sitting zazen at San Francisco Zen Center with Shunryu Suzuki. But he also was really kind of longing to connect to other gay people, so he started the gay Buddhist club in the Castro, where people would hang out and meditate and talk about Zen and meditation. And it eventually became the Hartford Street Zen Center. And this is the beginning of the 80s, and by 1987, in kind of the height of the epidemic, all around the Castro and all over this city and many, many cities, people were dying so quickly. And during that time, he also ordained as a monk with his teacher, Richard Baker. And that's when he was given the name Isan One Mountain. But as a response to his dedicated Zen practice and really sitting with things and realizing that they had to do something for all the guys who were dying all around them, and one story that I love so much is that he realized that they started having people living in the Zen Center who were dying. He just started taking them in because that's what needed to happen. People would come and knock on the door and ask for help. And really, as many of us understand, that really the most important thing we can offer is our attention, tenderness, and love. And he did that. And when there was more and more men coming there to die, he needed more space and went next door and knocked on the neighbor's door and told him that they need his house. So they expanded next door to create more space. And during this time, you know, Isan was quite criticized for not being a real Zen person. Because real Zen people don't also take care of people. It's like where we get into trouble when we have ideas about things, ideas about what practice is. It's so amazing because also Chodron and I got a lot of flack from certain people about, you know, you can't have a Zen center for contemplative care. It's not for anything. In many ways, our idea of this center was really inspired by Isan. Just seeing what's needed. The other day we were giving the closing keynote for a palliative care conference, and our friend Diane Meyer was also one of the keynotes for the day, and a wonderful guy named Sean Morrison, who runs the palliative care department at Sinai, and we were talking about what's really needed. And they were saying, well, what we're good at is training people in the medical piece of it, which is really about 5%. And you guys are training people, and what they really need is actually how to pay attention. How to be caring. And it's the missing piece. The 95%. And to me, it's so wonderful to realize that we don't have to be very smart. You know, it's just about listening and receiving. So to me, hearing Isan's story just made me realize that it's more of that is needed. So it's not an original idea. And we don't have to be so smart or clever. Isan, as a Zen teacher and priest, was known for befriending everyone. No one was turned away from his warmth, from his hospitality. No matter what stage of illness they were in. And how many of us are that? To me, it's such an inspiration to think about, like, cultivating that quality of hospitality in ourselves so that we're not so into our own story and our own habits, but actually realizing it's not about us. Not at all. On Chodo and I's first date in Father Demo Square in the West Village, drinking espresso, we talked about this book, Street Zen, that is about the life of Isan, and how we both were so inspired by this book. And we found that, you know, Zen and caregiving and death were really into it, and like that was kind of sexy. Like a friend of ours, book Sex, Death, and Enlightenment, Mark Matuszek's book. But how many of us really were willing to step forward and out of our comfort zone into what's needed? How do we uncover ourselves so that we can participate more? Let go of our stories, our grasping and self-clinging to our stories, so that we can just be of use. Wonderful poet that I knew named Nanako Sasakai, he said, he translated Isa, he loved Isa's poems. And how lovely, through the torn paper window, the Milky Way. How lovely, through the torn paper window, the Milky Way. To me, so much reminds me of Isan's life about, like, it's so easy to think, like, oh, he could have really stayed in his story about his crazy childhood, his years as an addict. But he used the tear to see something else, to see the vastness. To me, that's courage, to step out of our story. Oh no, the paper's torn, the window's torn. How many of us stay at that place? There's a problem. There's a famous koan that I love where a student goes and sees the teacher and says, you know, I have a problem, can you help me? He said, absolutely, I will help you. And he said, let's go into the Dharma Hall. And he brings everybody into the Dharma Hall and said, everyone, so-and-so has a problem. And he left, the teacher. I love that story. We can think that our problems are so special. And get caught in just that there's a tear in the window and not see through it. How our life is changed when we see through it. Into the vastness, the Milky Way, imagine that. Through the tears in your own life, to see the vastness through. Ikkyu says, exhausted with gay pleasures, I embrace my partner. The narrow path of asceticism is not for me. My mind runs in the opposite direction. It's easy to be glib about Zen. I'll just keep my mouth shut and rely on love play all day long. I love that. Can we allow ourselves to rely on love play all day long? Not just in the way that probably Ikkyu's talking about, with his partner, but about with the world, with the Milky Way. Through the people that you see today. Being loving towards the person in the mirror. All day long. And not getting caught up again and again in all these ideas. And to me, Isan really plays that role, or inhabited that way of being, loving so many people, caring for so many people, people he didn't know. Can we allow ourselves to do that? See the Milky Way through the terror. I can't imagine what would be more important.